Well, hello everyone. This is Linda G. Robert. You're back in the groove again, coach here, and here to help you live your best life now so you can love what you do. And one of my goals this year is to connect with very interesting women that I've met, individuals that I've met, that I've connected with. And one of those lovely individuals is Dr. Heather McDonald, a very caring and compassionate woman. Dr. Heather McDonald is a registered psychologist and a licensed life insurance agent in Alberta and in Ontario, Canada, of course. She has worked with at-risk children, with teens and their families for over 25 years in clinical and management positions. She worked with at-risk families through not-for-profits, schools, private, public, and chartered schools, young offenders, correction facilities, and therapeutic and addictions treatment settings, in each environment becoming more aware of how more knowledge could truly able to help families find their true potential. Dr. McDonald completed her PhD in clinical psychology in 2015 and her life insurance license in 2021. She approaches her work with families from a postmodern systemic perspective, where she relies on social constructed realities to guide her understanding of systems, human narratives, and cultural intersectionality. The longer she's in the field of helping families, the more she is recognizing the importance of financial stability to support mental health. Welcome. Welcome, Heather.
Thanks, Linda. It's nice to be here.
Thank you. And so I want to focus on the financial stability to support mental health. First of all, how did you ever come to decide that this is what you wanted to focus on? How did you recognize that need?
Well, I think I stumbled upon it more than anything else. Having worked with families in the psychological realm for so long, one of the things that constantly was on the table was worrying about money. It was really, even just worrying about money to pay for therapy. It's one of those things that insurance companies might pay a little bit, but you get $500 a year and that gives you two sessions. And a treatment doesn't really happen in two sessions. And so oftentimes we end up in a situation where families start treatment and then we need to figure out how to support them through it. And so that's where I started thinking about mental health.
And when did you make that decision that this is something you want to move forward with, the life insurance piece?
Well, the life insurance piece was interesting because with a life insurance license, you can also do investments. And it was something I didn't understand. I'd managed my way through 3 degrees and I really just didn't understand money and finance. And, I don't know why they don't teach us these kinds of things in school, but and I would sit and meet with teenagers who were being launched into the world and they didn't understand it either. How do you invest? How do you plan for retirement? And so it just sort of happened upon it in listening to families. And then not really my favorite, but when it happens, it became more and more, just more and more, I can't think of the word that I'm trying to say, but it was prevalent that if a crisis happened for a family, their mental health would suffer because they they had to be thinking about where their next meal was coming from, if they were going to lose their job. And 2020 really was a place where tons of my clients lost their jobs, lost their benefits.
Yes.
Yeah. And so when that happens, they lose their benefits, they lose their access to mental health support.
When I think about it, that's the worst that can happen, because when they lose their job, if they have any savings, then that'll go so long. But then after a while, when they don't have any savings left, the pressure, there's a lot of pressure. Can you give us an example of, a case where this was really helpful to them, having access to maybe investments or life insurance, whatever, that was really, really beneficial to them?
So I have to keep my worlds very separate. So if I'm involved in the psychological side of things, I'm most often not involved in any way financially. But if I'm involved financially, I don't treat psychologically. So I keep them very very separate. My licenses are very separate. But I've worked with a family recently where it was very clear that they were going to lose their house. They had to renew their mortgage. Their mortgage rates were going to go from 1.8 to over 6%, with the increase. They hadn't done the math to figure that out. Their mortgage renewal was happening, and when they went into the bank to find out that it was going to be about $1,500 more a month on their mortgages. They have three kids at home, and those three kids are all kind of teens, and they're very expensive at this point in time. And they were saving for the kids to go to school, saving for their own retirement, all of those things. And then, unfortunately, the gentleman, the dad in the house, had an accident at work, and he was off work, and his short-term disability ran out. And so now we've got a situation where they're renewing their house. They don't have any savings because he's been off work. And mom was a stay-at-home mom. And so she's had to go back to work. She's working evenings. He's working in a job that actually isn't what he would like to be doing. And it's unfortunate, right? And what does that do? It increases everybody's stress. And if I ask the kids say to me is, the problem isn't that, we're unstable as a family. The problem is that we don't have any money.
Right. And that's a huge cause of stress. Okay, so understanding, of course, now these are separate entities, separate businesses, and of course, you need to treat it differently. I understand that. So let's focus on the education piece when it comes to investments, I suppose. Let's focus on that. How would you approach that with people, or do people approach you? How does that work? Do
A little
people
bit of
approach?
both now. I approach people for the most part,
Okay.
same as I would with my private practice and psychological realm. You just want to get your name out there and people. The thing I love about doing financial services is I can sit at the kitchen table at their houses with them talking, as opposed to the psychological world where it's so different and confidentiality is so different and all of those things. So it's great to be able to sit at the kitchen table and say, so do you guys understand compound interest? Like, do you understand how much money, I did it just yesterday, how much money you would have if you put $25 a month now away for 45 years? Like,
So just $25.
oh yeah.
Right.
Like,
Wow.
for so I was talking to a 20-year-old who was just about to get launched, and you'll have about $300,000 just sitting there at 25 bucks a month. Like, it's not a significant monthly amount, but that compound interest, depending on where you're investing it, what your rate of return is. And so really just teaching the basics of compound interest, the rule of 72, and where can you invest in Canada, and when you're investing, how much of that money is going to the government, and how much of that's staying in your pocket, right?
Right. Can you remind us what that rule of 72 is, please?
Sure. So you take 72 divided by the rate of return you get on your investment. So if you divide by 4%, so 72 divided by 4, that's going to tell you how often your money is going to double. So that would be 18. So I use 4% because that's the average GIC that you're going to get at a bank. And so every 18 years, your money's going to double. So I don't know about you, Linda, but for me, I don't have a lot of doubling periods left if every 18 years they're going to double, right? But if I can get 12%, now my money's doubling every 6 years.
Right.
And so the higher you go. And so teaching that rule of 72 is important. And the next part of it's even more important because debt works the same way. So if you take 72 divided by 21, which is our average, right? Our debt is increasing about every 4 years.
Right. And is that something you're noticing with youth or even, older people, the death piece, the debt piece, I should say, not the death piece, the debt piece. Is that something that's becoming more and more prominent
Oh,
to
yeah.
young?
Yeah, because our access to extra money it's there everywhere, right? We have to use a credit card to sign up for all of the apps that we get on there, right? So kids are getting credit cards earlier. They're getting student credit cards, the student credit lines, all of that stuff. And as the Bank of Canada rates go up, most of them are attached in some way to that, to Prime, right? So yeah, it's
That's a
exorbitant. Our
real.
debt is going through the roof. And our investments are not. I don't
Yes,
know how
right.
many kids I've talked to recently, kids, and by kids I mean, 20 somethings. I probably shouldn't call them kids, they're full grown adults. But I say to them, so do you have a TFSA? And they're like, a what?
Oh, yes, right.
I said, well, that's the only place to save right now outside of a housing account, where you're not going to get taxed. And they said, well, what are you talking about?
Yeah, that is a good one. Let's talk more about that one because that's an important piece. They don't get taxed on it, right? Even when they pull the money out. So tell us, please, more about that.
Well, if you think about an RSP, right? RSP gets taxed 100%. So everybody
Yes.
loves it because we've been brainwashed by
Yes.
to think you're going to get your tax deduction. Well, excellent. So I'm getting a tax deduction on, say, $100, but that when that grows, that's going to grow to, say, $100,000, which is when I actually get taxed on it at 100%. So if my rate is 30%, I'm going to pay $30,000 in tax on that 100,000. But
Yeah,
nobody
like a
talks about
lot.
that, right?
Yeah.
Whereas a tax-free savings account came in 2009, you can put about 7,000 in a year and it rolls forward. Right. So if you start that when you turn 18, and you can have up to those of us who, have been adults since 2009, we could have up to 89,000 in there. That should be your first vehicle of investment that you fill up because it's tax-free. I can take it out at any point in time and there's no tax on it. So
Yeah.
why would I want to, if I saved up 100 grand in my tax-free savings account, I mean, it's close now, about, $90,000. Do I really want to give 25 of it to the government or do I want to just keep it? But it's
Yes.
called a savings account. So what people do is they put money in and then withdraw it, money in and withdraw it. It should be called a tax-free investment account, because if it's a tax-free investment account, people don't think about taking money out of it.
Right. So let's change the name, or at least
Think of it that way.
tell people they can change the name and think about it that way. Absolutely. Now, how young should a person be to start one of these TFSAs?
You have to be 18 to start a
Or they have
TFSA.
to be 18. Okay.
But you don't have to be older than 5 or 6 to start learning how to save money.
Okay, good point. Good point. So then let's go to that. How do parents, or maybe you teach the parents to teach your children? I'm not sure how that works, but how do parents then teach their kids how to save money?
Well, one of the things that parents will often do, and I just want to make a disclosure here. I'm a non-parent. I am not a parent.
Okay.
So parents will often hear what I say, and they're like, well, she's not a parent. What does she know? Good point. But here's some just food for thought. So we want to make sure they know how to use a bank card. So how many kids under 10 have their own bank card? A lot. So
Really? Okay,
a
because I was
lot.
thinking, no way, no.
Oh, a lot
Oh,
of them.
yes?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
And how
Tells you I'm
many
out of.
junior high kids go to the 7-Eleven at lunch and they just withdraw whatever they want to withdraw?
And
And
you
they,
know, okay. You're
right?
right. Okay, I apologize because, I'm in Mexico right now and I'm using pesos, I'm using cash all the time. And of course, if I'm in Canada, I'm using my debit card.
Right, it's just a tax.
Okay, got it,
Kids
got
don't
it. Okay.
even know the value of those dollars because they don't even see it. It's a tap. It's a tap. Or it's a credit card number online to get onto Instagram or onto whatever account you're trying to, right? And so unfortunately, it's a great thing that parents are starting early to set up bank accounts and teaching them the value of putting money away. But what seems to not happen is helping them understand savings.
Right.
Right. And so saving to buy something is one thing, but saving to not touch is not something that,
Yeah.
right?
Right.
So
Yes, it's
even
that immediate gratification. Once they get money, they want to spend it, I imagine, right away or fairly soon after they get it.
so lots of parents are doing really a really good job around not letting them touch it right away. It sits there and they're saving for what they're saving for. But
Right.
purchase or it's something. But to just sit there and not touch it till you're going to school, till you're saving for a house, till you're
Right.
saving for retirement.
Yeah.
Actually being able to watch it grow and think about compound interest. Well, lots of parents don't understand how compound interest works.
Right. So I get why children would not understand the importance of letting it sit there. They can't see themselves when they're even 20 years old, let alone 15 when they're young kids, right? So, and I know it's important. I understand the value of that. How can we help them understand that? Is there a way to help the families know, the parents know that it's important for their child to start investing in money, long-term growth money. How can we convince them or at least educate them on the importance of that?
So actually educating families as families. So it's not you take mom and dad into a different room and you talk about finances. It's actually we're talking together as a family about finances.
Okay.
How much do groceries actually cost?
Right.
Do we know? How much do we as a family spend on groceries? Hey, do we
Right.
want to go on a family trip this year? Well, lots of families can't ever afford that. We got lots of families who can, but our kids have no idea how much that costs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or they get gifted money for their birthdays or Christmas, or and that money goes towards buying these big purchases.
Right.
And so the best way to educate our children around it is by educating ourselves and by demonstrating it. How do we talk to each other about money? What are our family values around money? And that gets us into the mental health. Do we have a scarcity mentality? Like we just
Right.
have to have enough to get by. Well, by
Right.
having just enough to get by, what does that do to your stress level at the end of the month?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no, that's huge. That's huge because you're right. Families, well, I'm thinking of my family when I was a young parent. My kids knew I was putting money in envelopes at the time because I was on a limited budget. They knew that. That I remember because I would show them the envelope, but we really didn't talk about the price of things at that time. Absolutely, we didn't talk about that. I might have said, I don't have enough money for this, but that's all I might have said around that. And I think parents, even now, they probably say, sorry, can't afford that, we can't afford that, we can't afford that, but we don't discuss the bigger picture of the cost of certain things and why certain things aren't affordable at this time.
Well, and
But this
it's interesting, right? Because by saying we can't afford that, we can't afford that, we can't afford that, what are we teaching our kids about money?
Yeah.
We're teaching it that we don't have it.
Right. Instead of thinking abundantly kind of thing.
Right. Like what I'm learning and meeting with families is that if we start to think about money as something we can have and how we're going to get it, rather than don't have enough, so I'm not going to spend to that amount. Not suggesting that we should overspend or spend outside of our means, but we absolutely can do things to increase what's coming into our house rather than going into debt for what's in our house. Because if you think, go back to that rule of 72, if my debt is increasing every 4 years, but my investments are only increasing every 18 years, I'm in trouble. But if I can do something to smartly invest and I can get my investments up to 10% and I can get my debt so I don't have any unsecured debt, now all of a sudden I have more money to work with. The other thing we don't talk about is that real estate can be a great investment, but it's not savings.
Right. It's not savings.
It's equity. And we borrow against our equity all the time. Well, actually, you're just borrowing against your future.
When you think about it, when you really think about it, do you think this is a cultural thing? And we'll get back to what we're talking about, but is this how we've been raised as Canadians, you know?
Well, it's interesting because I would have to say, is there a Canadian culture?
Okay, that's a whole other conversation, and you're right. Okay, good
Because
point.
when I meet with families from international families, or if I meet from Mexican families, or I meet with Islamic families, or wherever, we have a much different value around money depending what culture we come from.
Yes, that's
And how
right.
we talk about it and believe we can have it is different.
Yeah.
And when
Yes.
we stress about it, it actually feels different. I think about families that come into my psychology practice and they have no money. And then I have to ask them for, whatever it is, 240, $220 an hour to pay for them to be able to talk to me about how stressed they are about money.
Yeah.
And how anxious they are that they're not going to be able to get their kids this brand or that brand whereas we've got a lot of immigrants into Canada now, refugees into Canada that have come from nothing.
Right.
right? Because they've been in refugee camps, they've been in, and their understanding and value around money is completely different than our understanding.
Yes, you're right. Yes, it is.
And dissecting our values, what we believe about money. I know my grandmother would have spent everything, given everything away while she was here. That was just her value. If you have money, you have it to spend on the people you love, right? However, I was speaking with an elderly woman the other day who said to me very clearly, I don't want to touch any of it because it needs to go on to the next generation. And they were both British women in their kind of 70s, 80s with very different values. So is it about legacy? Is it about living the best life you can now? And it doesn't matter. It matters that you know what your value is and that you're moving towards that.
Interesting values, because that's something we might hear, but do we really keep them in mind when it comes to decisions that we make, right? And so let's talk about values and decisions we make related to finances. What are some of those values that people could be considering or maybe instilling?
I mean, one of the things that parents often will think about, right, is how do I leave my children in a better place than I was, right? And so do I want to pass on a house to them? Do I want to make sure I pay for their education? Or am I fine with them taking out a student loan to do their education? Or my values as their parents are going to direct how I spend my money. Is it important to me that my children see the world? Right. And so what is that value? And none of those values are right or wrong. They're simply what guide us. And so one of the things that I like to teach families about is their financial independence number. What's the number you want to have in your bank when you retire? Whether Right. So, what is that number? And then, how do we back orchestrate that number so that we can start saving now for what that number is going to be? And I have yet to have a family that I've, the odd one, who can tell me this is my number. Everybody should be able to say, this is my number. This is what I'm working towards.
But isn't it, I'm thinking, how do you think of the number? You really have to sit down and think about that number. You'd
Well,
have
you
to
need
think
someone
about
like
it.
me to come in and figure out the number for you.
Okay, that's how you do it? Yeah, that's how they have to do it, right? Because otherwise they're not going to think of that number. So they
Right, because
have to actually.
you need to factor in inflation. You need to factor in how much do you think you can live on your retirement? Because it's going to be less than what you necessarily needed in your 40s when you're raising your kids, right? You probably own your house by then. Well, maybe not in this day and age, but historically, those retiring now, lots of them are going to have owned their house. And so all of that factored, how much debt do you have? We have to figure out how to get rid of some of that debt so that you can start to save. How do you guess what your rate of return your investments are going to get? All of that. And that's one of the things I love about the work that we're doing is we don't charge people for this.
That I've heard that before, and I've experienced that before, and it kind of blows my mind in a sense, because you're providing so much education to someone that is free
Well, and it's
education.
free because the insurance companies and the investment companies pay us a lot of money. So if you invest with me or you get an insurance policy with me, I'm not going to take money from you. I don't want to double dip. I could charge you and take money from you, and then the insurance companies and investment companies can pay me as well. That's better off for me. But if I'm doing this because I actually genuinely think that our family's mental health and mental stability is based in their understanding of money. Why do I want to take money from them? Right? I do want to get paid for my time, but I want the people who have the money to be the ones who are paying me.
Yes, makes perfect sense, of course. And you can, because I suppose that when you do talk about a certain possibility or product, I guess, with the families, then you'll get paid in one way or another for that. At least it doesn't come out of the family's pocket at all. Zero, which
Right,
is.
because they're probably talking to me because they're very much aware that they don't know what they're doing with their money. They're paycheck to paycheck, or they take money out of this account to cover this account, and it's just a constant movement of their money from one account to another to try and get by. And what is that doing to our stomach issues? What is that doing to our gut health? What is that doing to anxiety,
absolutely.
our depression? You know, I was chatting with a young man the other day, and he said, you know, he was probably, he's coming up for 40. And he said, I've worked so hard. I worked two jobs and I still don't have enough to make ends meet.
Right. Yeah.
Well, how does he have time to just exhale? Is it really a mental health disorder that you have? Is it really an anxiety disorder? Or is it that you have everything in the world to be anxious about because you have three little kids at home that you're
Of
trying to
course. Of course, these are normal type of anxieties, normal type of stressors that would cause anyone, you know, that type. So this individual, how can you help him in terms of long term? Like, that's the conversation, right?
Well, and if I'm helping him on the finance side, the first thing I'm going to say is go chat with a psychologist about that anxiety. Let's get that under
Okay.
control.
All right.
Let's deal with that so that we can clear your mind so that, and we'll get some level of stability, understanding of your finances. Where is your money going every month? So you're bringing in, let's say you're bringing in six grand a month. Where is it going? Do we know? Right. Well, you're, and your wife's bringing in 4 grand. So that's 10 grand a month. Where is it going?
Right.
How much are you saving? How much is going to taxes? How much is going to debt? How much is going to kind of costs that are not movable, right? They're going to be monthly, your mortgage, your electricity, or all those stuff. And where can I, you know, look at your pie and say, I'm going to take this sliver and I'm going to expand it. And usually we can find between $500 and $1,500 a month that we can free up to put into savings when we actually start to look at where the money's going.
I think that's the important piece, because I think most, you know, without your help, people probably think about doing it at some point, because when it comes to the crunch, they will do it. They will do it. But I think it needs to be facilitated, you know, by your services, for example, because they might not think of everything and they're so involved in that pie, they can't possibly think of everything that they need to think of. You know, except if you were there to facilitate this meeting, because you probably, you know, everything that they could probably think of in terms of expenses, right? And long-term things too.
And it's interesting, in our day and age, people don't want to give up their Starbucks. You know, we don't want to give up some of the thing, our comfort things that we do. And so part of what we want to do is make sure we know what's important to you. Is how important is it for you, for your mental health, for you to have a Starbucks on the way to work? It's pretty important to mine. I like my Starbucks on my way, right? But is my Starbucks stopping me from doing something else? So if we're back into that scarcity mindset of I have to give up everything in order to fix this problem, people are not going to continue it. It has to be sustainable and they have to be able to see the benefit of it as they go along. But speaking of that, one of the other things that is so important to the initial stages of financial stability is doing what I call the foundations of your house. And insurance is the foundation of your house. So if something happens to the primary earner in your house, like your partner ends up with cancer or a stroke or whatever it is, do they have critical illness? Do they have, are they, do they work for themselves and they're subcontractors and they don't have benefits? So then what do you do? Right? Are they only on short-term disability for 6 weeks and then there's you know, 60% of your income? So is there something in place, or worst case scenario, they pass away and now you can't pay your mortgage because your husband has passed away and you absolutely can't even take time off work because you actually have to become the primary provider. Well, what a wonderful thing when insurance does what it's supposed to do, which is give you a check for $1 million or $500,000 so that you can take the next year to get your family back in order.
And this is something I imagine that people don't really want to think about, right? Like, or they think it's not going to happen. Well, we know we're going to die, sure, at some point in our life, but we don't think an accident, a disability could occur. We really don't think it's possible, unless we had somebody in our family that, you know, that it happened. But I would think most people don't.
The other problem is that if you don't get insurance in place early in your life, it gets harder and harder to get insurance because we get old and we get illnesses, right? So if you use my story in particular, I had a stroke at 30. I had no insurance. I was not married. I was unattached, trying to make ends meet. And I had a stroke. So now what? I can't work.
Yeah.
And what am I going to do? No insurance. And now when I try and get insurance, I'm going to be highly rated because I've had a stroke early in life.
Right.
Right? And so had I been in a situation where I was in a family and my family needed that my income, now what do we do?
Yes. And that's the reality. These things do happen, obviously, like in your case, it happens. And you know you've lived it, right? You know.
Exactly. And I would have laughed at you if 2 years before you'd said, "Hey, Heather, go get some insurance." I'd been like, "Why am I going to spend an extra, $100 a month or $50 a month on insurance? I can just go work." And no, because we're in that invincible stage early in our
Yes.
life, right? Nothing's going to knock us down. But I can tell you, it's a wonderful gift to be able to give somebody the beneficiary of a life insurance policy or a critical illness policy and say, "Here's 50 grand. At least it's going to get you through the next few months to give you some time to figure out what you're going to do."
Yeah.
Right? Or it's your husband's passed and I can't bring him back, but here's $500,000 for you and your family. Take some time off work, manage your mental health, because grief is something that we can't speed up. You're going to have to go through that grief. Your kids might need some therapy, and
Yes.
we have at least have an insurance policy there that's going to support you through that.
Yeah.
And so that's your
Yeah.
foundation of your financial house, is making sure
Right.
that if something happens to any of you, and that includes losing a child. In my other world, I've had
Right.
families that have lost kids. And well, how do you go back to work when you only get a couple weeks off? You've lost
Good point. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the
Well,
foundation, insurance.
yeah.
And I'm a
Yeah.
believer.
Well, yes, for sure. I get that, especially when you see from on the other with the other profession that these things do happen, right? They do happen. Suicides, I imagine, too. You know, these things happen, and of course that affects the family, and they may not be able to get back to work within a certain amount of time, and then they're getting pressure from work to, I can just imagine. Yeah, that's an awful, awful pressure. Yeah. So let's kind of do a little bit of a summary of the importance of a financial plan of some sort that might even include life insurance and the relationship between this and mental health. Let's have a bit of a summary as we get closer to the end of our call.
Well, I think that when we think about the cornerstones of financial stability, what we're really doing is taking care of the first couple of rungs of Maslow's hierarchy.
Yes, that's
Can
right.
people feed themselves? Can they clothe themselves? Do they have a home, a roof over their head? Are they able to truly feel comfortable with the everyday parts of their life? And whether we like it or not, that's money.
Yeah.
And if it's not money, it's social programming. And the only way to get social programming is to pay the taxes to get social programming. So we come right back to money.
Right.
And what we have done historically with mental health is rung three is let's think about, our mental health. Let's actualize who we want to be in the world, what we want to be in the world. And we forget that people might not have had breakfast before they came to see us as psychologists, right? How many kids are coming to school with no breakfast, but I'm dealing with their ADHD? Am I feeding them? Do we have the social programming to make sure financially people are sound?
Yes.
Because how do you think about actualizing self, which is higher up on the Maslow's hierarchy, if I'm hungry, if
Yeah,
I'm cold,
it's not going to happen, right? It's not
right?
going to happen. Yeah.
And if I'm a parent and I can't ensure that my kids are fed and I can't ensure that, they have everything they need, then the stress and the depression and anxiety and all of those mental health issues are now what are the front runners. Now I have parents who are drinking. Now I have parents who are angry. Now I
Yes.
have parents that are moving into addictions. And I have kids that are learning that the value of money is that we don't have it.
Right.
There's
Yes.
lots of money in our world, lots of money in our world. We get it. How do we teach our kids how to be living from in a place of abundance, both
Yes.
in health and in their financial worlds and stability?
And it's easy because you were mentioning, right when we first started, it could be as simple as $25 a week.
Absolutely.
It sounds very reasonable and very simple to do. Right. The life insurance piece, I imagine that's something a little bit different too, but how do people find out more about your services? If they wanted to at least have that type of conversation, where can I direct them?
They would just reach out. They could reach out to me on LinkedIn. They can reach out to me on social media.
Okay.
I have an Instagram account. I have a Facebook account. I have a TikTok account. People reach out to me that way. They can just directly send me an email. And I'm happy to be helpful to anybody.
Well,
Yeah. The other
thank you. Well, yes,
side
please.
of what we're doing is also building a team.
Oh, let's
Warriors
talk
across
about
Canada.
that then.
Yeah,
Okay, let's talk
so
a little bit about that.
people who want a side gig to come on in and we'll train you and we'll teach you. And I mean, I'm a psychologist. I'm not an insurance broker. I didn't wake up one day and go, I'd love to be an insurance broker, right? I didn't. I'll be. I had somebody like myself who worked with me for 15 years before I got my insurance license. Why? Because I needed help. I was a psychologist who knew nothing about money, right? And so come. Work with us, and happy to train you, and then that you can train others, and we'll just get as many people as we possibly can. 91% of Canadians are going to retire beneath the poverty line. There's never going to be a lack of need to help people understand money and finance.
Right, so there's work to be done. Right? It's not like there's work to be done, and that's to educate the Canadians on the importance of putting some money aside, not for tomorrow or the week after or the next month, but for maybe even for their kids when their kids are old enough.
I mean, we've heard forever about what do they call it? I call it my safety account. There's another word for it though. A emergency account.
Oh,
Emergency.
yes.
And how many people put their emergency account into a bank that's charging them fees?
Right.
Right? There's tons of banks you can go to that don't have fees. We'll put your emergency money in there so it doesn't bleed out.
There's so many different things to learn.
And that mindset of I actually can have money, I actually don't need to be in poverty, is something that we don't teach people. We teach people how to stay out of poverty, not to believe that we don't need to be in poverty in the first place.
Right. And I think that's a huge shift that with your help, we will eventually be able to get that, to really get that. You know, I love that. And thank you. I want to thank you. And I will be including the links to this video as well so that people can get a hold of you.
Awesome.
Is there
Well,
anything else you want to add? Pardon
just that
me?
I appreciate you, Linda. I appreciate you taking the time to hear my story and hear my passion for kind of marrying these two concepts because they're so
Well,
often in different planets.
I know, but I could see it. I could see the relationship. You know, I worked in mental health for many, many years, 14 years actually, in psychiatry, and I could see it. I understand it, of course. So I thought this is an interesting conversation to add that piece of financial education to that piece. It makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. So I want to thank you again for being here. Thank you, and for educating me. Reminding me of some things that are very important, and of course, that of educating the people that will be viewing our video or listening to our podcast later on as well. Thanks again.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, Linda.